This is Northumberland at 5.
And welcome to a Thursday edition, right before the May long weekend. I'm Dan Jones, in with you for the next hour. We have a jam-packed show today for interviews up on the board, so let's get started. Despite the rainy and wet, cold conditions, many children and youth tried to hook the biggest fish at a long-running derby in Northumberland County, May 2nd and 3rd, historically taking place 1 week after the start of trout fishing season. The Castleton Sports Club invites children 14 years and under to a stocked pond. This tradition has been going on at Riken's Pond for 40 years. Jeff Turney, a director with the Castleton Sports Club, says the club is attempting to introduce a new outdoor activity to children.
The weekend was okay. Sunday wasn't exactly the day that we would hope for, but interestingly enough, Saturday, there was a lot more anglers, fishermen, and they were pulling some decent sized fish on Saturday, even though we started off the day with, you know, looks kind of doom and gloom to, I think that's rain to now it's hailing to, this is now snowing to back to, yeah, it's kind of a doom and gloom day. Well, usually between the canteen more or less is the one that'll make a little bit of money, and we may make $1,500 or so dollars out of it. It's one of those fundraisers that we really don't expect a lot from it. It's more or less a thing for the kids in the community outside of regular sports.
Right on. And obviously, yeah. It's close to opening trip weekend, so that makes it a little more special.
Yeah, we plan that derby around the trout weekend, so we do it the weekend after, so you know the fathers or the adults, they can do their opening season night with their buddies, and then the next weekend come out with the kids. We stock that pond every year. We'll put in, you know, 300 fish to get it prepared for either that, you know, that particular derby, or to have into it for the next years or the year after's derbies.
Right on. And biggest fish on Saturday?
Biggest fish on Saturday, I believe, was 3 pounds, 1 ounces.
Wow, that's a fair-sized trout, actually.
Yeah. And Sunday, it wasn't big at all. I think it was only a 2.
Oh, 2 pounds. Yeah, when we were there for 2.5 hours early, we saw three bites and one fish.
Yeah.
So I asked a kid there. He said he caught three the other day or on Saturday, but he said it wasn't working today. And I said, yeah, okay, but that's, you know, that's the way it goes. Talk about this partnership you have with Riken's Pond, because this derby has been going on since well before. I mean, I attended it as a child, so it's been going on.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you've got a good connection then. Okay.
Yeah.
So the derby originally started back in like 1988, 1989 with a few fellows. And they were going to have it in a different location. Well, they had it in a different location on the very first time. And then they relocated it to Riken's Pond. And then as it moved forward, you know, year two, year three, it was then became part of the Warkworth Service Club. And the membership within the service club, you know, they're gotten up there in age and it became a lot for them. So Mr. Riken, he was a member of the service club. He reached out to me and said, I'd like to, you know, can you come up and see me? And I've known Mr. Riken for a long time. And I went up and saw him, and we talked about what was going on and what he wanted to see in his vision. And then we decided to take it on, and we took everything on. So the barbecue, the derby, anything around it, because before they would have a different group would do the barbecue, and a different group would do the fishing part of it, and then a different group would, you know, do a raffle table and things like that. So we've had it for, I think, since 2022, 2021, when we took it on as the Castle Sports Club.
Oh, right on. No, I've got fond memories with my dad, and now I'm building them with my son. So it's and I saw a lot of little anglers out there with their mom and dad, so I thought that was a pretty cool, touching tribute to the whole derby and why it's being held. Is anything else to add there, John?
Well, what we did when we first took it on was I asked Mr. Reich, and I said, look, and I said, you know, how do you do this? And he says, well, the top fish over the weekend, they'll go and have dinner with the members of the service club. And I said, okay, so just one place, one kid, one prize. And he said, yeah. And I said, and they have dinner with the service club. Yeah. Okay, so can I change it up a little bit? And he said, absolutely. So then what we did was we laid out first place for each of the 2 days for the day. And then we had second place, and then we anteed up on all the prizes. So now we're giving away, you know, mountain bikes for first place and all this fishing gear for second place. And we're trying to do as much for the kids as we physically can to make them want to, you know, have those memorable moments and want to keep coming back. So that's kind of our side of it to what we do. You know, in the community, we're all about kids with the sports club.
That was Jeff Turney, director with the Castleton Sports Club, discussing a recent youth fishing derby. Sandcastles, Lorraine Davies here on Northumberland at 5, featuring local musicians. That's what you get here totally on this hour. It's quarter past 5 right now. Northumberland County is susceptible to human trafficking of girls as young as 11 years old due to its proximity to Highway 401 Jocelyn Enright with the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center says her agency recently lost government funding of $175,000 from Ottawa to support efforts to help prevent the recruitment of young girls, but also assist those wanting to leave sex work. She spoke with Robert Washburn of Consider This about the impacts this funding loss will have on the community.
Yeah, it's been really big news for us. We were fortunate enough to have that for quite a few years that was getting renewed, and it was specific for our human trafficking supports. So generally our funding that we get, like our core funding, comes from the provincial government, and that covers survivors age 16 and up. But we know with things like trafficking that the average age of entrance into trafficking or people that are being groomed is about 12 to 13. So this money allowed us to work with those younger age groups in getting them connected to support. So the loss of that means that we are back to just doing 16 and up, which obviously we still provide supports as much as we can then, but we are missing kind of those key age groups where people are most at risk for being trafficked.
So you received this money for 5 years of programming, am I correct?
Yes.
So then I appreciate the age group and the demographic, but what support specifically were you providing to survivors in that community?
Most of the supports we were doing at that point was focused a lot on safety. When you're dealing with that age group, you're dealing with a lot of people who are either entrenched in trafficking and can't leave for whatever reason, whether that's for safety reasons or they don't recognize they're being trafficking. So a lot of that is very much connected to meeting people where they're at, connecting them with other services that might be able to give them funding, like Victim Services Peterborough Northumberland. They sometimes have some more monetary support. So if we could get somebody out of a situation and maybe into a safe house or a hotel for a certain amount of time, or get them money for food and clothes and things. So it was a lot more of that kind of on the ground work and connecting with people who maybe aren't ready to leave yet, or don't even recognize what's happening yet. So kind of doing that very initial stage treatment. So we're kind of missing again that entire part, which is again where people need the most support typically.
Before we go on, let's get some basics in place. What is human trafficking? Can you describe what that entails?
Yeah, human trafficking, it's a global issue. So it's related to, specifically we're talking about sex trafficking. So there are different forms of human trafficking, like labor trafficking, organ trafficking. But specifically when we're looking at sex trafficking, it is the recruitment of people to participate in sexual exploitation, basically. It happens a lot with young folks where, you know, they meet somebody, most often it's online, and, you know, they form a fake relationship with them, whether that's kind of more as a mentor or a friend or a more typically a romantic partner. You know, they offer them all of these wonderful things. They say they're going to be with them forever. And then once they're deeply, deeply connected to this person, they start to manipulate them. The relationship becomes toxic, and then they force them, whether that is physical force or simply mental manipulation, into doing sex work.
Is there any alternative sources of funding for this program?
We're doing our best to search for it through many different avenues. For right now, I don't know of anything that's come through, but we're doing our best to work with as many people as possible to try and find some way to supplement it.
Now, the Ontario government also has an anti-human trafficking strategy. It launched last year, and it's to last till 2030. Does the center do anything within this umbrella?
I would not be able to comment on that. I don't know enough information.
In the press release that you put out, your organization says that without this funding, there will be fewer tools. First of all, can we start with what tools are you using now and what are you going to lose?
So the tools now, again, are really getting to connect with folks when they are most at risk of trafficking. So hopefully, right, connecting with people maybe before they're fully entrenched in trafficking, and if they're kind of just in those beginning stages, or again, really working with people where they're at. With trafficking, I think it's kind of a common misconception that you know, it's really easy for people to get out of it once they realize what's happening. Because oftentimes people are not being, you know, it's not like the movies where people are locked in cages. It is very much a psychological manipulation. So oftentimes when we're working with trafficking survivors, it's working with them while they are still with their trafficker, and they may remain with their trafficker for years. So trying to work with them really on safety and stabilization. Most of the time, if someone is leaving a trafficking situation, in-depth trauma counseling is not the first thing that they need. What they need is their basic needs met by somebody who's not their trafficker. So getting them connected to shelter, or some kind of safe housing, getting them connected to jobs, helping them get out of debt that a trafficker might have put them into. So we're again, we might be able to offer counseling for folks at some point, but that's typically not what survivors need right away. They're not looking at that till later. So unfortunately, we're kind of losing those connections right at the beginning.
You've used the word connecting in terms of initially meeting with these people. How does that process take place? How do you do that outreach work?
Again, we do a lot of work with community organizations. It can be very hard for people to, you know, get through the door for some sort of treatment. So even if it's something like often, you know, if someone's going to the hospital for a medical issue and they start to show some red flags for hospital workers about, you know, potential trafficking, then they can kind of do a call to us or victim services and see if maybe we can have a conversation with them. It's often not somebody, again, walking through the door and saying, you know, I'm experiencing trafficking. So it really is kind of about those soft handoffs and meeting people in those different office spaces and just seeing if we can show them that we're an agency to be trusted. That's a big thing. If somebody does not trust you as an agency, then they won't want to continue working with you. So just trying to meet people wherever they're at, if possible.
So this is a referral service. Am I understanding that right?
For the most part, yeah. Or we're working with folks if they are kind of, again, navigating, if they wanted to report something to police, we're supporting them with that. Yeah.
Now you said earlier that you're now going to have fewer tools. What resources are left now with the funding gone?
With that funding on, so for us, again, we still do support people with, you know, if they're navigating reporting to police, court support, if they're looking for counseling. What it really just means is that we are kind of back to being pretty strict with our funders about 16 plus. So if people connect with us earlier, we are kind of just referring to other agencies, but we can't really, you know, we can't be the ones to go and meet with folks. We can't be the ones to be doing that. So again, people are still welcome to come for counseling at some point, but again, with trafficking specifically, that's usually not something that's on people's radar for a long time.
To listen to the full interview, go to considerthis.ca.
A safer Ontario means more police and prosecutors making sure my car doesn't get stolen.
It means building new jails to keep criminals behind bars.
And it means there's no need to worry when I play at the park.
We're making every corner of Ontario safer to make all of Ontario safer. That's how we protect Ontario.
For all of us.
Learn how at ontario.ca/saferontario, paid for by the Government of Ontario.
The staff at Country Sign and Wraps welcome you to bring your project by their shop. Summer's almost here, and they'll help you get ready. Marine, all-terrain vehicles, golf carts, your summer car, whatever you like to drive, they can wrap it. They'll help you design artwork for your project, or if you already have something in mind, you can email it to them at countrysignwraps@gmail.com. Spots are booking quickly, so text or call 905-516-1000 to make an appointment. Country Sign and Wraps, your one-stop shop for everything sign, design, and wrap related.
This spring, join us in celebrating locally grown businesses with fresh farm markets, patio dining, outdoor adventures, and springtime shopping. Northumberland has it all. When you shop local, you support your neighbors' jobs, our local economy, and your community. Nominate your favorite locally grown business for the chance to win a gift basket of local goods worth $500. Visit buynorthumberland.ca to nominate a business in Northumberland, enter to win, and take the pledge to shop local. Visit buynorthumberland.ca.
25 past the hour here on Northumberland at 5, turning our attention to Port Hope, where it appears the Community Action Plan passed by Port Hope Council last year could be conflicting with municipal bylaws. The Environmental Advisory Committee examined the action plan against current laws and claimed to have discovered five potential areas council may examine. Nathan Tedford recently addressed Port Hope leaders to discuss his findings.
And so the passage of the Community Climate Action Plan last year was a big milestone, not only for the town, but for the Environmental Advisory Committee as well, as we're helping to lead the implementation and liaise with the community on this. And so one of the actions that we had coming out of this was to look at the various strategies and areas that we had and identify essentially where are there, specifically here, bylaw issues that are out of alignment with how the Community Climate Action Plan frames certain issues. And predominantly it's because many of those bylaws were passed in the past and this has kind of brought a new direction to it. There was a couple of other things. We had a delegation from youth in the community last year speaking on Boulevards to Butterflies, sort of encouraging us to look at that. And they had actually done some of their own research into bylaws of other municipalities that we were lucky enough to be able to have them share with us, along with pictures and sort of what they were doing local to their schools. And this also kind of adopted, we were referred from council, the encroachment bylaw. And so that kind of folded into what we've been looking at. And so there's 17 strategies as a whole. And as you can see, the bylaw updates we're looking at really address six strategies, or certainly portions of six strategies. So it is quite wide ranging. So we've looked really at five bylaws, four existing and the encroachment one that was referred. And really what the focus was is looking at what the Community Climate Action Plan is trying to encourage our community members to proceed with and identify areas where there might be some ambiguities or overlap. And so we looked at municipal maintenance, tree protection, property standards, and clean yards. And, you know, even if we look at this, a clean yard bylaw looks to regulate litter, yard waste, and sort of property maintenance. Property standards does kind of a similar thing. It's the standards for maintenance on occupation of properties. So there is some overlap. Municipal maintenance talks to the boulevard area. And again, we can kind of see some of the preambles on the slides here in terms of encouraging natural areas. But then when you actually get into the clauses that are written, there's some ambiguity and things that we think that could be improved. One of the other areas that we think is cause for some confusion within the bylaws and just at large is definition of where municipal property ends and private property begins in sort of the term of boulevard area. And a lot of people's front yards, side yards in many areas are actually municipal property. And so the diagram on the screen kind of shows in areas where there is a sidewalk, you know, there's the road, you have a strip beside the road, you have the sidewalk, then there's actually a fairly wide area potentially of municipally owned land up until when you get to that private property line. And the way that the bylaws are set up right now is that there's actually different standards potentially on both sides of that dividing line, even though it kind of happens right in the middle of people's front yards. And so it's ambiguous that way, and we want to encourage it to be harmonized such that we have the same standards essentially on both sides of that private to public line. Now, we do realize next to the road, next to driveways, next to intersections, next to hydrants, that we do need to have restrictions in place for traffic sight lines, collisions, encouraging access. But again, it's once you kind of pass through that threshold, we think there's an opportunity to encourage more naturalization, food production, and other areas. We've summarized a few of the different sort of language and rules that are in the bylaws themselves versus what we're looking to encourage from the strategies that are embedded in the Community Climate Action Plan. So on the right-hand side is, you know, we're looking to encourage naturalization, improve biodiversity, native species planting, rain gardens, right? Encourage water retention on properties and not having it overflow into storm sewer systems, urban food production. And all of those are things that we want to encourage. But when we look at what the bylaws are, again, there's very sort of strict definitions that can be applied. One of the other interesting things that we came across is there has been a number of litigation instances over the past couple of decades between municipalities and residents who are trying to encourage or maintain naturalized areas. A number of them have ended up in the Superior Court of Ontario, and all of those have kind of been found in favor of the residents maintaining naturalized areas. apart from the fact that they do have to maintain appropriate sort of safety and health and safety concerns. So we think there's an opportunity to, again, take some of those learnings from those areas and apply them to our bylaws. You know, I would say there's kind of mixed messages throughout each of the different bylaws. They might may conflict with each other. They may restrict what we're trying to do. So again, it's aligning our actual bylaws and policies with what we're trying to encourage in the climate action plan. And part of this, again, is, you know, if we have people like our youth delegation from boulevards to butterflies, you know, they kind of, the first thing they do, hey, we want to go do this on our front yard. Okay, well, let's go see if we can, if we're allowed to do this, right? And well, the bylaw says we can't, right? So regardless of what the policy might be, that's sort of the first interface potentially with sort of, hey, can we follow and help implement this policy from the climate action plan? So we just want to try and, again, make it more aligned, make it easier for someone who goes to look at it and say, no, this is explicitly allowed. I can go forward with that and help to push this forward. What's important as well is that this isn't new. So we have done, myself, together with the members of the Environmental Advisory Committee, surveyed a lot of other municipal bylaws throughout Ontario, looking at what's been done and what's been put into place. And so looking at encouraging boulevard productions, you know, having tree protection not only on private land but on municipal land, encouraging green infrastructure, encouraging naturalization, and how to sort of go through those. There's an attachment to the minutes in this presentation where there's a more detailed analysis and sort of recommendations of specific bylaws that have been in place, sort of as guidance. They may not be applicable directly in this case, but again, you know, we're not proposing something that hasn't been done elsewhere as well.
On the other side of the break, we'll have some more local music, so stick around.
Hi, I'm Sarah Jacob of SMM Law Professional Corporation. Do you own a small business that owns real estate? Is your corporate real estate register up to date? What about your register of significant control? Are your provincial annual returns up to date? If you'd like help with any of these compliance matters, call SMM Law at 905-372-3395 or email hello@smmlaw.com. SMM Law, we are here for you.
Nuclear energy has safely and reliably powered Ontario homes and the economy for decades. Join a public information session on the potential for a new nuclear at the Wesleyville site in Port Hope. Meet OPG staff, get answers to your questions, and learn about the potential community and economic benefits. Register today for a virtual or in-person session at opg.com/Wesleyville.
I'm Philip Lawrence, your Member of Parliament for Northumberland Clark. It's an honor of a lifetime to serve each and every one of you as your voice in Ottawa. As your federal representative, my office is here to help you with any federal programs or services that you may require assistance with. Everything from passports to CRA to OAS. We are here to help. Give us a call at 905-372-8757. That's 905-372-8757. Thank you once again. It's an honor and privilege to serve.
And now, Northumberland Humane Society Pet of the Week, brought to you by Northumberland 89.7 FM. Meet Pixie, a unique cat looking for a calm, pet-free home. She prefers to be the only animal and isn't quite suited for small children, as she can be a bit feisty. Pixie loves exploring, enjoying treats, and shows her sweet, affectionate side when she's comfortable. Visit northumberland897.ca or stop by PetSmart Coburg to meet Pixie today, because every pet deserves a loving home.
Looking for a meaningful summer job in community media? Well, Northumberland 89.7 FM is hiring a full-time community liaison person through Canada Summer Jobs. This 8-week position pays $17.60 an hour for 35 hours a week, with flexible hours including some evenings and weekends. Help build community connections, coordinate events, promote local programs, and work with organizations across Northumberland County. If you're a strong communicator who enjoys working with people, apply today. Contact Larry Crook at 905-269-1024 or larry.crook at northumberland897.ca. Northumberland 89.7, local radio, local voices, local community.
Thank you. must ignore the doubters. We must just live together. We must just find a way. We must make a difference every day.
That's Summer House with We All from their 2013 album, A Little Help from Our Friends. We've got about 21 away from 6 o'clock here on Northumberland at 5. I am your host, Dan Jones, in with you for the next 20 minutes or so. It's unknown when the new Golden Plough Lodge long-term care home will open, as there are delays with meeting provincial inspection sign-offs. The county is essentially operating two facilities. That's twice the security and twice the utilities, for example, not to mention additional staff having been hired while having budgeted on the assumption that the move would have been completed earlier this year. Inspections have been completed and maintenance crews are acting on inspection deficiencies. The county's report back to the ministry in early June will specify remaining timelines for any final work to be completed. At that time, more information about timelines for a resident's move-in will be shared.
The GPL team has been in constant dialogue with the province on an ongoing basis. A virtual tour was held for a walkthrough at the plow, and with that came a significant list of what the inspection team saw that they wanted explanations for or corrections that they thought would be necessary. All of that information was provided to them. There had been some delay out of the province about when the actual inspection team would arrive on site. And originally we had indicated that that would be, we were told it would be April the 20th. That date became a bit mobile. But in the end, they did arrive on April the 20th. So they were here from the Monday, April the 20th to Friday, April the 24th. The on-site inspection team consists of five individuals, all with various levels of expertise in specific areas. It begins with a full facility tour, a walk-around, and in order to do the walk-around, they requested that they be accompanied by the senior management team for the plow, as well as any associated individuals who are responsible specifically for the construction component. Excuse me. In maybe the best word to describe the undertaking is minutia. To give you an indication of the type of questions and activities that were undertaken while they were here, and each day ended with a debrief from the five individuals. They went room by room through the facility, everything from opening every window and shutting the window to call bells and communication, every drawer, all doors, faucet, lighting, lumens, dome lights, food guards in serveries, hot display areas, air exchange and temperature controls. They requested all applicable standard operating procedures, especially in the areas of infection control and resident mishaps, job descriptions for all positions, staffing patterns and justification for those patterns to ensure that the amount of staff was equal to the number of residents in the various formula that they apply. Their expectation was that all inventory would be on hand, so all utility rooms would be have contents which would suggest that the operation was ready to open that day. So this included cutlery counts, dish counts, towels, sheets, medical supplies, all storage areas to be fully stocked, even though we're utilizing inventories which will move over with the closure of the old GPL and opening of the new GPL. Trades and service technicians have been on site for March and April for various tweaks to systems within the building. They noted that there still remains some remnant building materials, an empty insulation bag on a balcony, etc. There's specific equipment that has been ordered, but there are there is a timing issue related to that. In particular, one area in particular is the autoclaves known as tornadoes. The tornadoes are responsible for the sanitization of bedpans. There was one moment where it was implied that every resident in the plow would be using a bedpan, when in point of fact it's only about 10% of the population. As much as we tried to establish a green building, hand dryers need to be replaced with paper towels, because there is an issue in their minds about individuals slipping while having wet hands in front of a hand dryer. So just to give you a sense of how this went for five days, and also our work, because as soon as something was identified, we had somebody usually from building services on it to ensure that it could be corrected. And some of it was minutia, some of it was left to us to determine how we were going to be able to overcome that challenge. We've been at that on an ongoing basis since the inspection team left. One thing to note as well, it's a bit of a moving target in that when plans were approved and all site plans were approved by the province and signed off, that was followed by constant changing of legislation to try to ensure the safety of and security of residents. Some of that is now being applied to the new plow, and so there are discussions back and forth as to, you know, where is the line in the sand on this particular item. We are in dialogue with the minister's office and the senior bureaucrats engaged in this to try and find a middle ground, and we think we're just about there. From a timing aspect, once an inspection team finishes their on-site review, they have 7 business days to provide us with a report. They provided us with a report after 5 business days. So we received the report at the end of day Friday last week. And in advance of that, because of the debrief meetings, we knew what items were needed to be addressed as quickly as possible, and also we're trying to narrow down the time frame. So some of those items have already been addressed, some are in process, and some we require additional discussion. Once we finish our report, which is due this Friday, we are also awaiting a part 2, which has not arrived as yet. The ministry has 21 business days to review that report, and that's not by the inspection team, but by the directors who the inspection team report to, and then we will be notified of our status at that time. One of the other items that you should be aware of in terms of the green lighting of the home. Once the home is green lighted for operation, any construction activity that would occur in the home, no matter how minor, is placed under a different set of rules and regulations, which are such that the residents must be protected at all times. So there are some items that are about to be installed or about to arrive to be installed. And given the timeline we have, what we're trying to do is ensure that we have them in play before we go to the operational guidelines for the home. And, usually the cost of doing work in the home after the fact, once it's open, is about twice what it normally is, mainly because of the considerations that must be given the residents. So certainly the team, the plow team and the senior team should be recognized for the amount of effort that has gone into the back and forth. What we've also found is that there are different levels of communication within the ministry. So requests for information, which we had forwarded, for instance, at the beginning of March, we've been asked to resubmit because no one realized that type of information had already been submitted for review. So to say the least, we're well into it. We'll have a better indication post our Friday submission of where things are. It's interesting that on day three, the lead inspector gathered us to say, our expectation typically when we do this is you should pretend we've brought our parent with us and they're ready to be installed in the home. That's the level that we want at this point in time. And that isn't quite how it was depicted, as we were told that what the inspection team was looking for. At any rate, we're on it, but it's as I said, occasionally there is no line in the sand for some of the requirements, and some are open to debate.
That was Dan Borowick, the CAO of Northumberland County, providing an update on the inspections and possible move-in dates to the new Golden Plow Long-Term Care Lodge. Community announcements are next.
This summer, skip the grocery store and get more dock time with HelloFresh. The Big Green Fridge Tour is rolling into the Port Hope en route Friday, May 15th and Sunday, May 17th with free, ready-to-enjoy meals inspired by HelloFresh's summer recipe collection. Whether you're headed to the cottage, the beach, or just out for a weekend drive, HelloFresh is helping Canadians spend less time meal planning and more time making summer memories. Look for the iconic Big Green Fridge at the Port Hope en route this May and taste summer with HelloFresh.
If you're a local business looking to grow, this message is for you. Katz Media Port Hope is now Katz Marketing, a trusted local team with over 40 years of experience helping businesses stand out. From print to digital, we help you reach your customers, wherever they're searching, including online and in AI. Our clients say it best. They captured our essence and branding, an exciting journey from start to finish. If you're ready to grow, we're ready to help. Katz Marketing, built for what's next. Check us out online at katzmc.ca or give us a call 905-885-9998 to start a conversation.
Here's what's happening in Northumberland.
Hi, this is Andrea with What's Happening. Cornerstone Women's Day Luncheon. Listen to inspiring guest speaker Brandy Lifeso. Enjoy a delightful lunch and browse the silent auction. And it's a fundraiser for Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, Thursday, May 14th at 11 a.m. at the Best Western in Coburg. You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown opens Friday, May 15th to the 31st at the Capitol Theater in Port Hope. Warblers and Whimbrels this weekend celebrate the migration of songbirds as they make their way north, Saturday, May 16th at 6:30 at Presque Isle Provincial Park. Coburg Garden Club annual plant sale is Saturday, May 16th from 9 to noon, and it's held at the Salvation Army Community Church, 59 Ballantyne Street in Coburg. Eye to Eye Filmmaker Showcase, a short film competition and one-day showcase for emerging student filmmakers. Saturday, May 16th, and it starts at 9 a.m. in Victoria Concert Hall in Coburg. The Port Hope Jazz announced their 25th anniversary festival season, Saturday, May 16th at 6:30 p.m. at the Ganaraska Brewing Company at 33 Mill Street in Port Hope. Check out the Port Hope Walking Tour spring schedule. Starting Saturday, May 16th at 11 a.m., go to acoporthope.ca. The Roseneath Carousel opens Sunday, starting May 17th, from 1 to 3 until Thanksgiving.
If you have an upcoming event you'd like us to share, email info@northumberland897.ca.
Stay up all night, sip all day. Doesn't matter what you do, turns out the same way. Living on Jim Beam, my road lights. Band's driving 15 songs an hour, babe. Underneath the bright stage lights, holding my heart.
That's Arizona Bliss on The Way It Was, The Way It Is, actually. That was from 2014. Somewhere great local music. Well, folks, that's going to do it for me today. It's been a great hour spending with you guys, getting you up to date on all the great stuff that's been going on in Northumberland County recently. On the other side of the break, we got your 6 o'clock news. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. Take care.
Cross my heart, I hope to hold you close. You move softly across the hardwood floor. Dressed in nothing, nothing's what we like. You've got a heart that beats like mine. When you comfort me, is that who you want to be? I knew it all along, I knew it all along. From the start, right from the start. And I told you it ain't wrong, it ain't wrong. Comfort me, is that who you wanna be?